It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to each and every one of you who are contributing to keeping our independent voice on the air as we look at these issues between freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. Socialism ultimately comes down to force, and socialism is not about free stuff. That's just the carrot that gets you to vote for socialism. But ultimately, socialism, communism, they need workers. The difference is property rights. Who gets to keep the fruits of your labor? You or the government or some elite? And that's the big difference on this. It's a time that we're in right now. And thank you to each and every one of you who are listening. I really appreciate you. You have a purpose today. Live with intention. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to this team that I get to work with, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. It is Turnquist Friday, producer Steve.
It is, and he's here.
He is here. Rick Turnquist, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. It's great to be here.
And you have another great op-ed. You are an author. You're a blogger. Your blog is to advancefreedom.com, correct?
Correct, Mundo.
Okay. And this great piece that you have done, Failed, or Minimum Wage Fail, is on the website now. And be sure and take a look at that. You make this very compelling case of what actually happens, the real effects of forced minimum wage.
Yeah, it's just one example of out of many that we should look at in our current political environment. The left is promoting all of these ideas, which they couch them in language such that these are good things, but the actual real world effect of many of their policies is exactly the opposite of what they want. So when government artificially sets prices and makes it illegal to hire entry-level workers, then it's going to be hard for entry-level workers to find jobs. And for them, it's kind of a self-licking ice cream cone, because when people can't find jobs, then they look to the government for support and assistance. And as a matter of fact, with these COVID payments, employers all over America are looking to hire people as we recover from the pandemic. But people aren't taking work because they're incentivized by government checks to stay home and be idle, which isn't good for anybody. And the net effect of all of these programs is fewer people working and higher prices for everybody else.
But then ultimately, Rick, you have to move back to somebody has to work, because ultimately somebody has to produce. Otherwise, what happens is people go hungry. I also think you can't believe that this could actually happen here, but I mentioned just a moment ago that socialism is force, and this carrot of all of this free stuff that's all it is, because ultimately you'll have to have workers. And then what happens in a society like that is people that have gotten free stuff but can no longer produce on the fringes, then they start to become expendable.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And the fact is that wealth is created by productive labor of individual people. And when people go into the market and they produce for an employer to add value for that business, that's how people earn a living. Minimum wage jobs are strictly intended to be entry level jobs. They're not. When I worked for minimum wage, I was 15, 16 years old, and I lived in my parents' house. My dad worked and earned the money to support our family, and I learned how to work through that first minimum
exactly.
wage job. And I wasn't at minimum wage for long, because I evidently had a talent for sweeping parking lots and doing, you know, very, you know, low level work. But, you know, I wasn't minimum wage for long. And when I got my first real job, you know, while I was in college, I was making considerably more than minimum wage with the skill set I had developed to that point. So minimum wage jobs are not supposed to be primary breadwinning earning wages. They're strictly a means to get to the skills and experience you need in order to advance to higher paying jobs.
Absolutely. And if you are good at sweeping parking lots and you do a job well, what happens is you get promoted.
That's
and
right.
You get a raise. And so instead of this forced minimum wage, we need to be teaching our young people to do a job well and to do things to make themselves more valuable to their employers. When that happens, you're going to make more money.
That's exactly right. And showing up on time, showing up sober, showing up when you're supposed to, doing the things you're supposed to do. And every job has elements of things that you don't like. And even now today, as a, you know, person who's been in the workforce for, you know, over 40 years, it's you know, there's still things that I have to do that I don't really care to do, but you still have to do them to get them done and add value for the company that hired you.
Absolutely.
And that's what it really comes down to.
And the more value you bring to the company, typically the more the company is going to pay you. Or there's and also remember, there's an entrepreneur out there that is creating that job.
Right.
Someplace, somebody out there is taking risk to make that happen. Producer Steve, would you like to weigh in on this?
Oh, Rick just has me going when he talks about his earliest job and ultimately sweeping parking lots. So I was immediately transported back to my earliest days. And
your job was changing tires on, or changing wheels on wagons?
Hey, at least when I went to my job, I didn't have to crank start the car.
Bada-boom.
No, but where did it go? Oh, I remember when in those days, and I won't say the year lest I date myself, but the minimum wage went from $1.65 an hour to $1.75 an hour. So there you go.
I know.
But the other thing I was thinking as Rick was talking, when the politicians start spewing this minimum wage stuff, there's always that one component, I bring it up every time we discuss this, is they're buying votes with it.
Mm-hmm. That's what they're attempting to do. And
it actually redounds to their benefit, and I talk about this in the blog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more people, the more that unions make, the more union workers make, the more money goes to the union, and the unions overwhelmingly contribute to Democrat Party politicians and other progressive organizations. So it's a self-licking ice cream cone, and it just goes to further cement their power.
Mm. Most definitely. Let's see. I've got to figure out time management here. Let's quickly, you know what, let's do the quotes when we get over into your piece in the third and fourth segments.
Okay.
Because we're quoting Lenin, and that was very apropos. And just very quickly, our bill of the day is Senate Bill 21-175. It's the Prescription Drug Affordability Review Board. Basically, Joni Inman has written an excellent piece. It was in the Colorado Sun. And basically, she says, a prescription drug price control bill is the wrong answer for Colorado. And it says, does Colorado want to be the nation's guinea pig to test the ideas of an out-of-state billionaire who thinks that the way to bring down the cost of certain prescription drugs is for states to build a bureaucracy and control those prices? Senate Bill 175 does that. And basically, Rick, once you get into price controls, what happens is prices go up, supply becomes limited, and typically quality can go down. And your comment on that?
Well, as I thought about this, I was thinking back to the 1970s when Richard Nixon was president, and even though he was a Republican, he was still, from a freedom and limited government standpoint, he was a terrible president. And I remember the wage and price controls that the Nixon administration put on the economy in order to try to fight the inflationary crisis at the time, and it just resulted in scarcity of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm old enough to remember when my mom got up in the morning on dark, cold winter mornings to go sit in line at a gas station to get gas for the family car. And we didn't even drive much back then because we lived in a place where my father rode public transit to work. But it was very evident to me, even as a teenage kid, that you know, wage and price controls just simply do not work at controlling wages and prices. All it does is really increase scarcity. And we saw it during World War II when the Roosevelt administration tried to impose price controls on things. So it's never a good idea. And by making this board, and I haven't studied this bill in detail, but this board is going to try to establish limits for what people can charge for drugs. And what's going to happen is that at some point there will be less of the drug available to people. And if it's a life-saving drug, that it could cost lives.
Mm-hmm. And you've nailed it right there. You know, Rick, we're going to go to break here in just a little bit. Before we do that, though, one of my great sponsors, Hal Van Herke, is on the line. And we're going to be talking about minimum wage with Hal. And one of my great partners is Castlegate Knife and Tool. It's a family-owned business located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And they have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. So whether or not you're a chef or a collector or a sportsman, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Hal Van Herke. He is the entrepreneur and owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool. And Hal, welcome to the show. Every time you're on the show, people reach out to me and say, I really enjoy learning from Hal and his perspective. So I want to talk with you about this forced minimum wage, but welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kim. I'm really happy to be here today, especially talking about this. It's a pet subject of mine. So there's so much misinformation and lack of understanding in this area. So I'm glad you're doing a show just about this.
Well, I found it astounding. Just within the last week or so, Long Beach, California, they passed what they called hero pay for grocery store workers and different people in those positions. And it was a $4 hour increase. Well, what happened, instead of people making more money, two grocery stores decided to actually close. So all those people lost their jobs, and the people lost their neighborhood grocery stores. And so I think when these city councils, these bureaucrats think about doing things like this, they don't understand the actual consequences, Hal.
Yeah, I think that's a critical component of what's going on. I don't think that most politicians, especially left-leaning politicians, have any business background typically and don't understand what's going on. I think it's a complex thing. I think, first of all, they don't realize that the average – I'm going to step back and say, again, this is yet another attack on small business. Okay, this impacts – small business much more than it does, and mid-sized business than it does large corporations. Very few people are making minimum wage at Google, Facebook, Apple, okay, because the people that work there invested in themselves for decades before they were strong enough producers to get those jobs. So this is another left-wing attack on family-owned business and small business. What most people don't realize is the average small business only makes 7% profit. So if my labor is 25% of my cost and you raise my cost 30% for that labor, so you take me from $10 an hour to $15 an hour, you have literally wiped out 100% of my profit, which is 100% of my reason for existing. And so I have to respond immediately by raising prices. Because that's the only thing I can do immediately. What people also don't understand is I already have a complex orchestration going on in my business about how people earn higher and higher salaries. I have entry-level employees, but then on top of that, I have to reward long-time employees for their loyalty. I want people to become top performers. They need to make more. Then I want to be able to pay assistant managers and managers and specialty skill sets more over time. And I have this nice little mechanism going in each of my businesses to help guide people through these career paths so that I get people where they need to be with the strengths and skills that I need them to have most. If you raise my entry-level workers, you're raising automatically the cost of all of my workers, because in 24 hours, they're all going to be at my office door asking for more money. And so I have nowadays, since I've done this for decades, if there's a passed along forced minimum wage increase, I immediately just raise everybody's salaries back to where they need to be, or the harmony inside my organization goes to zero overnight. So this passes through to everybody. Immediately, all my employees are going to make more money. I have to raise prices on my consumers in order to make up for that, or I'm out of business. And since I usually can't pass on a 50% or, price increased everybody overnight, I also have to start looking for ways to reduce jobs, automate jobs, and in most of my case with the growing businesses, just delay hiring more people from when I expected to. So I'll put a new job that was about ready to get posted out 3 months or 6 months just to make up for the labor increase. So it costs, raises the price for everybody, it reduces jobs, and ultimately it just raises the cost of living for everybody around. And everybody's right back in the exact situation where they started. And the only person that benefits from this is the government, who gets to charge everybody, all the workers and me, more payroll taxes, more employer taxes, and more sales taxes. So it's just a hidden tax increase to shift more of the burden of society from small business and consumers to the government to pay for their spending habits. So that's what's going on, and maybe someday I'll get an entire show to kind of talk to you about this, but it's people need to understand businesses only make 7% profit. Our businesses are already optimized to just try to get there, so it's not like we can just cut costs tomorrow or we would have cut them already. And I have to raise the price for everybody in my business. It throws everything out of whack. The only way I can do that is to raise prices and hope to do that in a way that I don't lose sales. And then in the long run, I need to push off and find ways to hire fewer people to preserve my business.
Well, and I think, Hal Van Herke, you really just nailed it there in basically just a few minutes so people understand what forced minimum wage does. I so appreciate your sponsorship of the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories with Kim Munson. You're a valued partner. Thank you, Hal.
Thank you, Kim.
And we'll be right back.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And thank you to each and every one of you who are contributing to keep our independent voice on the air. As we look at these issues, freedom versus force, force versus freedom, it's Turnquest Friday. In studio with me is Rick Turnquest. In the third and fourth segment, we will continue a conversation about forced minimum wage. But before we do that, Dr. Jill Vecchio is on the line. She is a healthcare policy expert. She's in the her day job is saving women's lives by detecting breast cancer. She actually is one of the few people in the country that read the Complete Unaffordable Care Act, the PPACA. And Dr. Jill, it's great to have you on the show. We wanted to talk about the security of our medical data, or HIPAA. And you've been doing some research on that, Dr. Jill.
Yes, and it's interesting that you mentioned Obamacare. Good morning, Rick and Kim, that you mentioned Obamacare, and they called it the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which is where all of this rule, the things we're going to talk about today, started, and I always called it the Patient Exposure and Unaffordable Care Act, PUCA, and I'm going to prove it to you this morning. So we have HIPAA, which is a patient protection and rules that are made through the Department of Health and Human Services, enforced through the Office of Civil Rights under HHS in Washington, and they make up all these rules about how to protect our medical information. Now, they're making all kinds of changes, obviously, in the name of COVID, but it's really just an extension of what was begun under Obamacare in 2010. Obamacare put all its emphasis on electronic health records, threatened doctors that if they didn't use these, they wouldn't get reimbursed for care. They had to submit ridiculous things in electronic health records, and they paid doctors to get all this stuff started up with electronic health records. So that was the origin of this. Right now, it's very strict. The HIPAA regulations are very strict about how any provider or entity can share information. And any entity that may have access to sensitive what they call protected health information. Any sensitive patient information has to abide by HIPAA, has to have HIPAA-related contracts with healthcare providers and all that, so that this information is highly controlled. I'm going to go through real quick what kind of happens now and how every single bit of that is being, every step of the way, it's being changed.
Wow.
Right now, the patient needs to, and you may have experienced this, it's kind of a pain in the neck, but it protects your information. You have to hand sign a request to have medical information transferred from one provider to another provider or entity. You have to sign that. Like when you have a, you have to sign to say, yes, I agree to have my medical records, and it can only be pursuant to that specific medical issue. It's like, you know, if you're filing for insurance claim, right, or they're going to file for an insurance company to pay for your care, they can only release the information that is directly related to that incident,
okay,
that disease entity, that kind of thing. So there, it's very specific as to how much information. It's not like, here, you can send my medical records to this person. That doesn't mean all the medical records. So for mm-hmm. mammography, the only medical records we can request, unless we specifically get a second signature on a different sheet of paper for something more extensive, but the only thing we can request is like mammograms, anything related to her breast care.
Makes sense.
I can't ask for, you know, her substance abuse history or that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mental health issues. That written request is faxed or, you know, mailed to the provider, and then they mail back or fax back whatever reports or something we need, or they'll mail us a CD of or their prior x-rays or mammograms, things like that. There are also very strict adherence. I mean, it's very strict about what you can and can't do, and if you violate that, the penalties can be huge depending on whether there was, if you inadvertently did it, the fine isn't that big, but if there is negligence or intent to violate any part of HIPAA, the penalties can be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
Well, and it's even been in the millions, but like per incident, it can be up to $250,000.
Wow.
So the penalties are huge. Every step of the way that I just mentioned is being abused in this new HIPAA rule. Now, the HIPAA rule was started, the change was started in December 2018, long before COVID. This was during the Trump administration that the changes were started, because it had been 5 years since they'd made any changes, so God forbid those regulatory people shouldn't have job security, right? So they have to go in and change them again. And let's face it, all of these bureaucracies, like you've talked about and we've talked about before, it's just a continuation of the bureaucracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the bureaucracy loved Obamacare. And I know that from people that I know that have been at HHS, like in Washington, that worked there, that are kind of like, you know, you got to understand, these people spend how long working on Obamacare? They lean left, at least Democrat, and they loved Obamacare. So all of this is just a continuation of Obamacare. What they're going to do now, instead of having a written request, now you might be able to do it by phone or online, which means that certifying that the person requesting the medical information is actually the patient will be more difficult and could be more easily abused.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you typically fax or mail the request to the provider. Now that'll be able to be done by phone or online. Now they're going to have you can do electronic health records. So when the records come back, they can be transmitted electronically. Now, there are going to be some firewall issues with different healthcare providers, because there's supposed to be so much encryption and so much security of this information,
right,
that you're not, you know, that's has been the difficulty with transferring information electronically, because everybody has their own system and they have their own firewalls, and you don't want those things to break down.
Right.
So now with this rule change, where they want it to be transferred electronically, the government wants it to be transferred electronically. They are encouraging that. They are going to start discouraging physical paper transfer of medical information.
Which, that's okay, scary. On one hand, Jill...
Because that means all these hospitals are going to have to change their firewalls, and that's frightening.
Okay, and on one hand, okay, that makes some sense, because I know that if you're working with different doctors, it may make sense that it'd be a lot easier just to go ahead and send that electronically. Seems like a good idea. But you and I, we were working together when you were going through this whole Obamacare thing. I remember that push for the electronic records, to get doctors to have these electronic records, I thought was very odd through Obamacare. And I always say they are playing long ball. And freedom people, conservatives, Republicans, liberty, we're all playing tiddlywinks, because this was, what, about 10 years ago now, 8 years ago, when they put this in place. And now you see, they say, oh, it's going to be secure, not to worry. You won't have to worry about your data. It's all going to be secure. Now, here we are. We're starting to see those rules start to relax. And what does that mean with this whole vaccine, we're calling it the experimental drug, because it has not gone through and gotten FDA approval yet. People need to know that.
And it does go right back to this COVID thing. Let me tell you one other thing that's really frightening. So now they're relaxing how much information in your medical record can be released. So it used to be, you know, in the mental health, substance abuse, all of that was really strictly, even more than regular, you know, diabetes or something like that. Anything that had to do with substance abuse or mental health issues was very strictly controlled. Well, now they're loosening up all of those controls on the specificity of what the information that can be shared is. So now you've got, and now if you do stuff online or through a phone app, that means that any entity that is like, you get the phone app from some other vendor, that vendor, whether you know it or not, that vendor will then have access to all of your medical information if you go through a phone app.
Whoever
the vendor was that created that phone app, and that vendor will not be restricted by HIPAA. They will not be restricted by HIPAA rules. I mean, and you sign all of these little, I accept, you know, all these ridiculous agreements, privacy agreements. Nobody ever reads them. They're 30 pages long on purpose.
Right.
It's ridiculous. So you just sign it because you're like, well, my doctor says I got to use this app or whatever. Or I want to use this app because I love doing stuff on my phone. Well, good luck, because, you know, you're just exposing yourself even further. And now let's extend it to the vaccine. If you use a phone app to make an appointment for your COVID vaccine, all of that information just went out the window.
Wow.
Okay, it will have, right? So this doesn't take, now, what I want people to know is, number one, go online. Go to hhs.gov and search for, it's going to be proposed, just put like proposed HIPAA, H-I-P-P-A rule, and it should be, because the websites are monstrously long, but it's under the federalregister.gov, and then you're going to have to search a little bit. They don't make it easy for you, but you can find fairly easily the where you can make comments on this proposed rule. So they make a proposed rule. This one was released December 2020. They extended in March. They extended the time period for comments through to May 6th. So you got a few days left to go online and make your comments. It's really easy to make a comment. I've done it before.
Okay, and Jill,
it's really easy, and everybody can do that.
What we'll do is Patty and I will get the links from you, and we'll have that in the show recap that we'll post on Monday on the website. And so we'll have all that there. And so, go to my website and go to the show recap. Final thought on all this, Jill. This is important information. What's the final thing you want people to know?
This is frightening. This is absolutely frightening. There, 80% of exposure of patients' medical, private, personal, protected medical information is not, 80% of the exposure of that information is all from digital, either hackers, mistakes, people that work in hospital systems releasing information, looking up their friends or their bosses' medical information, stuff like that. People inadvertently releasing it or releasing it on purpose. and now all the penalties for violations are going to be decreased. All of it's loosened up. All because there's no reason. Why would you ever do this? Oh, well, it's for coordination of care. And they make it sound like it's for the patient's benefit. Of course they do that. It's not. And coordination of care, no, we got this thing working.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Jill, oh my gosh, it's getting my blood pressure. It's getting my blood pressure. This is not good for me, Jill. So, Jill, great.
Not for any of us, especially if they want gun control, right? Okay, think about your Second Amendment rights. If somebody can tap into your mental health, or they can make something up, they can have access to your medical information, as long as their intent is good on how they're going to use it.
Wow. Okay,
yeah.
Very sobering, Jill. Thank you so much. Let's do an update again next week then.
Okay.
Sounds great. Thanks so much. And Jason McBride, that kind of takes your breath away with all that information, huh?
Well, you know, I was thinking that they could easily release people's medical records and make it sound like something's wrong with them and use that against them to the way they do now. I guess now they call it doxing. D-O-X-I-N-G, I guess with the medical record, it would be what, D-O-C-S-I-N-G?
I guess so. You're right on it, Jason McBride, Senior VP, Presidential Wealth Management. Coming in here on the end of the week, we've been talking about how important, there's so many unknowns out there, but for people to sit down and you know, do what they can with the people that they know, knowledge is power. I know you've been doing a number of these annuity reviews.
Yeah, I find a lot of times people invested in an annuity maybe way back when, or even maybe just a couple of years ago, and they do have some complication to them sometimes. Now, it doesn't make something bad just because it has some moving pieces, but a lot of times I think folks kind of forget those features or the exact way they work, or kind of forget why they bought it in the first place. And then, Kim, there's so much negative media about annuities in general, and then it's easy to come to the conclusion that you have something that's a bad investment, that maybe you just forgot all the reasons that you got into it in the first place. So I do the annuity review for free. If you come in with your latest statement, we can call the company, ask them some questions. You might not like the answers, but I find that about 3 out of 4 people are actually pretty happy when they find out exactly what it is they own. And at least you have more knowledge. And I like when people leave my office happy. So it's something that I'm happy to do for you. And it's free, and there's no high pressure obligation, nothing like that, Kim.
And how can people reach you to set up an annuity review?
The best way, just give us a call, 303-694-1600. That's 303-694-1600.
Jason McBride, have a great weekend, and we will talk to you on Monday.
All right, you too.
We'll be right back. It's Turnquest Friday on the Kim Munson Show. Rick Turnquest is in studio. We'll be talking with him about his op-ed, Minimum Wage Fail. Stay tuned.
Controlling your own destiny. There are a lot of unknowns on the horizon with the new administration. Predovich & Company is here to help. Trusted professionals for all your bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting needs. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. They've been helping her for years. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company works with clients from anywhere in the United States. Give them a call at 303-791-3000 to put Predovich & Company to work for you. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And thank you to each of you who are contributing to keep our independent voice on the air. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom, looking for truth and clarity on these issues. Several things. We just had a listener call in, Dr. Jill Vecchio, always just a wealth of information. And she had mentioned that we can go on regarding this new rulemaking on the website at the Health and Human Services. And we'll get that, we'll get all that, those web links on our recap, which normally is posted the next business day, which would make that Monday. Listener suggested that we try to get that up earlier, and we'll do that. We have a process, go through, and Patty works on a summary, and we just have these different steps that we need to make happen. And then, anyway, it takes a few different steps to make that happen. We'll try to speed that up and get that up hopefully by tomorrow morning. So thank you for the comment on that. Also, America's Veteran Stories this Sunday from 3 to 4 p.m. And they're replaying that 10 to 11 p.m. on Sunday nights as well. And we're continuing with our series, Echoes of Our War, Vietnam Veterans Reflect 50 Years Later. We'll be talking to Vietnam veterans Tom Jacobs and C.R. Cusack. Tom was actually, I found producer Steve when we were recording this. Tom was talking about when they were ambushed and they were in a kill zone and how to get out. I mean, I found it really fascinating.
Yeah, and it was, the timing was excellent because I had just read that segment in the book, and then to hear him, you know, speak it out again, it was chilling.
Yeah, and then C.R. Cusack was an F-4 pilot, and then Paula Sarles, a Vietnam-era veteran, she's explaining how we can help honor all of these Marines and our military personnel by helping remodel the Marine Memorial out in Golden, Colorado. It is TurnQuest Friday. It is always great to have Rick here, and he's written an important piece. It's on my website, Minimum Wage Fail. And I hadn't gone through the quotes for the day, and I think we could actually talk about both of them. Normally, I leave them till the one of them till the end. But Vladimir Lenin, excuse me, was born in 1870, died in 1924. He was a Russian communist revolutionary and head of the Bolshevik Party, who rose to prominence during the Russian Revolution of 1917, one of the most explosive political events of the 20th century. The bloody upheaval marked the end of the Romanov dynasty and centuries of imperial rule in Russia. The Bolsheviks would later become the Communist Party, making Lenin leader of the Soviet Union, the world's first communist state. And two things. The first thing he said, Rick, was the way to crush the bourgeoisie is to grind them between the millstones of taxation and inflation. And then the ending quote that I had, this is what Lenin said. He said, Germany will militarize herself out of existence. I'm having trouble. Here we're starting over. Germany will militarize herself out of existence. England will expand herself out of existence. And America will spend herself out of existence. So with that, I'm going to throw it over to you. Where do you want to go?
Well, Lenin was an evil man, very evil, along with his ideological forebear Karl Marx. Between them and their failed socialist ideology, they've unleashed rivers of blood, oceans of blood on the human race. You know, over the course of the 20th century, socialist states killed, you know, literally hundreds of millions of people and forced, you know, countless others to live in misery and despair. And you need only look no further than current day places like Cuba, North Korea, other true communist socialist countries to see that this is a true fact. And people I think a lot of young people may not even understand what socialism is. But and when I was a young person, I kind of was a kind of a liberal or progressive, as you might call it nowadays, person. You know, I thought, you know, why should there be great wealth and all this stuff? Well, I was cured of that when I took my first economics course in college.
And, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, college puts a lot of people towards the left.
Mm-hmm.
And I started on kind of a little bit on the left as a young teenager. And college kind of moved me strongly to the right. And I've never been left since then. But and it was an economics class, really, that did it to me. When I realized how much money, and this is in the early 80s when I was in college, when I realized how much money the federal government took from people to give to other people through so-called transfer payments, I turned my back on liberal thought.
Because it's theft.
Yeah,
it's legalized theft.
Theft. And the amazing thing is when we talk about, and you know, I wrote about minimum wage here, and this was a really something I was very passionate about 4 years ago when we had the 2016 election. And there was an amendment on the ballot to raise the minimum wage in Colorado. And so I did my research on the minimum wage, and I wrote a blog post on my site, To Advance Freedom. And this one is kind of adapted from that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of review the basic laws of economics. And I don't want to bore your listeners here, but I put in a very simple explanation of the way that the supply and demand works in the labor markets. And when minimum wages are artificially raised by government force, there's always going to be some number of people who are going to be unable to find jobs because there will be fewer jobs available for them. And minimum wages always result in unemployment for some people. And those people are usually the people at the bottom of the economic ladder. And I'm talking about teenagers, I'm talking about minorities, I'm talking about people with less education and people who are just overall less fortunate. Or it may be a senior person who's retired and just wants to get out of the house and earn a little extra cash, and they mm-hmm. don't mind going to sit at a door as a greeter for some company for $5 an hour. Well, you can't pay them that little. You know, the federal minimum wage is $7 an hour, and you know, maybe a company be willing to hire this senior at $5 an hour, and if they're willing to give their time for that amount of money, then
seems like they should be able to have that agreement.
Yeah, it should be a free exchange between an individual and a business mm-hmm. or two individuals. So you know, making it illegal to hire people at the margins is a disservice to those people.
Mm-hmm.
And it results in, you know, as Hal Van Herkey was talking about earlier, you know, if I have a government mandate forcing me to pay people more money, then I have to raise my prices, which means, A, that there will be less business for him because while people may be willing to patronize his business at X price, they won't be willing to pay for it at a higher price. So it limits his business, it limits the wealth created by the economy, and it drags everybody down. And there's studies out there that show that, and even at, you know, I looked at the Congressional Budget Office study. They did one in 2014, they updated it in
2019. They're seldom right, but
yeah. Well, they're supposed to be nonpartisan. You know, I don't buy that, but you know, it's a study that finds that raising the minimum wage costs jobs. And another study, which was admittedly from a kind of a right wing think tank, found that the results of raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour is even worse for people. You know, some people will get raises, but a lot of people will lose their jobs, and the real minimum wage in their case is zero.
And that's pretty compassionate, huh? No work, no income. Of course, then we're calling this a self-licking ice cream cones. Then they have to look to the government for assistance, which grows government so much that it's the carrot, would say.
It's amazing to me that people buy this. It really is, because when they talk about taxing the rich, they're not talking about taxing Jeff Bezos and Jared Polis, who's wealthy himself, and Pat Stryker, who gives millions of dollars to support leftist causes in Colorado. No, they're talking about taxing a couple that they both may earn around 100 grand. You know, they're probably in that 200 to 300 $1,000 income range, they're talking about raising taxes on those people. And those people, they may be small business owners. They may be creating jobs that they may not be able to create if they have to a higher tax burden. It may be a couple working for two different companies that, when their taxes go up, that's less that they can do to provide for their families and save for their kids' educations and stuff like that. It just is. Everything they say they want to do, is their policies produce the opposite result. And the whole idea behind socialism is it's compassionate to lift everybody up and all that stuff. Well, as we've seen in real life, socialism doesn't lift anybody up. It makes everybody equal in
misery. Brings people down.
Yeah, it makes everybody equal in misery and despair, and there's a small elite that lives high on the hog.
And they're living off of the fruits of everybody's labor because they're not creating anything.
That's right. And, people think that government creates wealth, and nothing could be more wrong. It's people who create wealth through their productive labor. And government has the legal monopoly on the use of force. So government can take property from people, whether that's property they've already earned or property that they are earning in the terms of in the form of wages. They can take that money from productive people and use it to spend, they spend it on whatever, infrastructure or in a lot of cases just taking that money from one person and giving it to another person.
But they take a big cut as the money goes by.
Oh, and of course they do. And it redounds to their benefits. I don't understand how somebody can serve in Congress for 30 years and become a multimillionaire based on a small salary, or why the wealthiest counties in America are the ones that surround Washington, D.C. So it's a real problem. And raising the minimum wage. So in Colorado, they raised the Amendment 70 did pass despite my brilliant blog post exhorting people to not vote for it. I found a chart that showed that in the years since then, the unemployment rate in Colorado had ticked up a little bit. It went up, down, and then up again, and then it went way up last year. But that's due to the pandemic, which was a government imposed thing. And government wants to bail the economy out from the results of COVID. Well, it was government actions that caused the economic slump in the first place.
Speaking of that, I'm hearing my ear to the ground in my town, which is Lone Tree, that they're starting to kind of test the waters on a tax increase. And we've seen a lot of public policy that has really closed a lot of businesses. And instead of raising taxes, I think that we need to have elected representatives that are making sure that we're getting our businesses open. I'm going to start to really watch that. There's going to be this meeting, which unfortunately I have another commitment. And this is kind of the way it works, is they start to have community meetings to find out what people want. Well, we pretty well know that most people don't want higher taxes. Now, they may want somebody else to pay more taxes, but people don't like to pay more in taxes.
Yeah, since Tabor passed, and we researched this and talked about this last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago now, but, we find that Coloradans generally will vote no on the statewide tax increases. Mm-hmm. And it's true, nobody wants to pay higher taxes themselves. And, a lot of people, unfortunately, don't see the moral problem in being okay with other people paying higher taxes. I like the flat rate that we have. If we have to have an income tax, it should be a flat rate, because then everybody pays the same percentage of their income in taxes.
Absolutely. And if you make more money, you pay more in taxes.
That's right. And when they talk about the tax burden on people that make less money, it's because they pay a higher proportion of their income taxes or of their income in things like sales taxes and property mm-hmm. taxes. And the lefties always want to raise property taxes. They want to raise sales taxes. And mm-hmm. now they're talking about, raising fees on gasoline to finance roads. And when I dug into Colorado budgets a couple of years ago and looked at things over time since Tabor was passed, the percentage of money spent on transportation in Colorado has been roughly the same over all those years. Mm-hmm. Whether Democrats run the show or Republicans run the show, it's always about the same. And that, if I remember right, it's about 6 to 7% of the total mm-hmm. budget. And you know, if they really cared about roads and bridges, they would allocate more money from the budget to pay for that stuff.
For sure. So, hey, Rick Turnquist, we need to take a quick break. We've gone long on all this because we have so much great information. But one of the reasons that you get to hear all this is because of Hooters Restaurants, another great partner. They have 5 locations. That's Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Colorado Springs, and Lone Tree. All their specials, you can find them on my website, kimmunson.com. And this weekend, get together with some friends, go over and watch some of the games on the big TVs, and be sure and check out Hooters Restaurants. And we'll be right back with Rick Turnquist.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
America's Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3. Here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at Kim at KimMunson.com as well. It is Turnquist Friday. Rick Turnquist is in studio. Kind of your final thoughts here, Rick. You have this important piece that is on my website, Minimum Wage Fail. What's your final thoughts?
Well, the left in America and throughout the world, I guess, everything they do is calculated to accomplish one thing, and that's to increase their power. And minimum wage laws are no exception to this. So a large part of it is what I call money laundering. And what happens is when unionized workers earn their wages, a portion of their wages goes to their union, whether they want it to or not. And that's probably why so many people vote not to be in unions, and why union membership continues to decline over time instead of grow, except for public sector unions, which is a whole different thing. But
which we shouldn't have.
Yeah, so people are forced to give money to these unions. The unions, in turn, give that money in bucket loads of cash to the Democratic Party, to Democrat politicians, and other progressive parts of the progressive infrastructure. And so unions benefit from higher minimum wage laws because even though very few union members actually earn the minimum wage, their wages are based on a formula, either a percentage or a premium amount above the minimum wage. So by extension, Democrats benefit from higher minimum wages because it generates more cash to help them stay in power. And this was written about by a guy in the Wall Street Journal. You can read that in the Post. I've linked to that article. And you know, another thought, you know, the whole thing that started this whole thing was these so-called hero wages out in California. Kroger's closing several stores in the Los Angeles area because local governments said that you have to pay everybody an extra $4 or $5 an hour because they're so-called heroes.
During the pandemic.
During the pandemic, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the Kroger says, okay, fine, we'll close the stores because we can't afford to pay the people that much money. And so what happens, these people who had jobs now don't have jobs, and their minimum wage is now zero. And the people that shop at those stores have fewer choices. They have to travel farther, maybe more carbon emissions because they have to drive longer to get to a store and that kind of thing. And it's just it was a stupid idea, pandering to socialist ideology, and it's caused real problems for people in the Los Angeles area that patronize those stores. So the bottom line is these things never work. And I want to finish with a quote from Thomas Sowell. He said, the first lesson of economics, and going back to my economics 101 mm-hmm. thing, the first lesson of economics is scarcity. There is never enough of anything to fully satisfy all those who want it. The first lesson of politics is to disregard the first lesson of economics. And we see that every day, with Democrats in the Colorado State Capitol and Democrats in the nation's capital. Everything they're doing is going to destroy the economy of our state and our country, and result in the fall of what was once the greatest country on earth.
We have a minute. Can we turn this around?
Well, I think we can, and it starts with education. They realize that, and that's why they're on top. We need to recapture the school boards. We need to homeschool. We need private schools, charter schools. We need to educate young people on the values of the American founding, on the value of free enterprise and self-reliance and independence, and understanding how the economy truly works, and the government is not your friend. It's not your big brother. It's not your teddy bear. It's a blunt force that will take money from you and your family to spend on whatever, whether you want it or not. There's no way to opt out of it. It's like this family medical leave thing. You know, if you work in Colorado, you will pay the family tax, and it will cost you, and you have no choice in the matter. So we need to educate people, and we need to vote intelligently in our regular elections every 2 years. We need to vote out the Democrats. We need to hold Republicans accountable, and we need to stand for the principles of freedom and limited government.
So that is what we need to be doing today. You have your marching orders. Rick Turnquist, it is always a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Kim. It's always great to be here.
Okay. You spoke of education. I have a new Lenin quote then for the end of the show. Lenin said, "Give me 4 years to teach the children, and the seed I have sown will never be uprooted." My friends, they tell us exactly what they're doing. So today, be grateful. Read great books. Think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. We've got work to do. God bless you, and God bless America.
Through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry. But tell them if I don't say